Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports, brought to you by the WBO, the World Boxing Organization.
Pedro, let me tell you congratulations on your long time in radio. You are your team and for your ratings, man. I was reading about that. I'm very impressed with you, Pedro.
And now, the host of the longest running fight show in radio and internet history.
I don't want to predict this fight, but, you know, I'm going to promise that I can give a good fight, you know, to make people happy, and I just do my best.
Pedro Fernandez.
If I can't teach you one way, I'll teach you another, but I'm going to get the job done.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen, live worldwide, emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar Sports Byline Studio. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. 35, no, make that 36 plus years now of being often imitated but never duplicated. Welcome to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. My name is Pedro Fernandez. In this hour, the second hour, of course, of the Sunday edition of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. If you are listening to the show live on Sunday, of course, 11 a.m. Pacific time, it's a two-hour show. We're live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, Channel 211, of course, SB Nation Sports, and like a plethora of other internet platforms. Bottom line is, you can also be listening to the show as far as a podcast is concerned. You'll be listening to the podcast at anchor.com. Of course, all the shows commercial free at anchor.com. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. As I said, often imitated but never duplicated. In this hour of Ring Talk Live Worldwide, we'll look in depth at the world of Muhammad Ali. We'll talk about his first wife. Nobody knows much about his first wife. We'll talk about Sonya Roy. Of course, he married her in 1964. They divorced a year later when she wouldn't accept the Muslim faith. At the end of the day, she's just a character in history, but I think she needs to go back and take a look at her because nobody knows anything about her. Never heard any interviews or nothing like that. So we'll hear about her in this hour of Ring Talk Live Worldwide, as well as maybe go into the dark depths of Ali Holmes back October 2nd, 1980. Of course, that was a fight in which Muhammad Ali was granted a physical by the Mayo Clinic, even though he couldn't touch his nose with his finger. Straight up, only in boxing. Boxing's just like business, baby, but in boxing, the blood shows. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Little tower to the break.
Must be missing an angel. Missing one angel child. Cause you're here with me right now. You're heavenly. Heavenly. Heavenly to me. Baby. Red kiss. Baby, baby, sweet baby.
Well, might go down in history as being the highest publicized fight in the history of the fight game. The most talked about, the most, I would say, probably controversial, the most loved, the most hated.
The greatest, of course, Muhammad Ali, born Cassius Clay in 1942, Louisville, Kentucky, passed away 4 years ago, June 3rd, 2016. Now, some of the payoffs for the USC card, of course, last night, USC 250, the payoffs were $500,000 went to the champion, the two-division champion, talking about Amanda Nunes. Her purse was $350,000, plus they gave her a $150,000 win bonus. How generous, Uncle Dana. Alamon Sterling got $152,000, including a $76,000 win bonus. In other words, he was going to get paid $76,000 had he lost. Cody Garbrandt got $260,000, the former world bantamweight champion. I think he fights out of Sacramento, California. He knocked out three times, and that's the way he goes. He either wins by knockout or he gets knocked out. But straight up, he was a knockout winner last night. He got a $130,000 total pay package, and of course that included a $130,000 take tobacco, $206,000 pay package, but $130,000 was a bonus. Neil Magny got $158,000. In other words, you know, these guys were part of a pay-per-view card. She's defending she's got a two-division champion, the greatest woman of all time as far as female fights are concerned, and she gets $500,000 before taxes, and she has to pay her trainers and all that kind of good stuff. That doesn't sound too equitable for me. Back to the same old story with Dana White, Uncle Dana. Biggest pimp in town, and he gets away with it. I don't know. You know why? Because he's got the game. I mean, you know, these other guys, Bellator, Scott Coker, he, of course, a former Strike Force guy, he just never got with the groove, man. Something's happening. I mean, he gets TV contracts. We watch the Bellator fights for a while, and then they fade away for a while. You don't see them. And, of course, when they do come back with a big card, usually like with a bunch of old-timer guys like Scott Cuddy against Hector Martinez, fights like that, nobody wants to see them old-timers fight. Those old seniors just don't want to see it. But that's what Bellator's into. And the rest of the world of MMA, although there are some fledging promotions for the most part, they can't throw a stick at the UFC. Of course, the UFC's got the performers, and I said that in the hour number one. It's not the performers. It's the UFC. That's sort of cold, but that's just the way it is. At the end of the day, the UFC matters. Now, if we get that Sean O'Malley clip ready, Sean O'Malley, of course, was a winner last night. He was a good-looking fighter, man. 12-0 now, 8 knockouts. Sean is for real. There's no doubt about it. And guess what? Eddie Lindland didn't think so. No, I take that back. We'll hold that for a minute. Straight up, you are tuning to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking to the world of boxing MMA. I threw an audible at my producer right now, quit real fast audible, and he's looking at me with these very ominous looks, folks. So I'm gonna get killed during the break. Let's go to this feature right now.
I'm getting deja vu from March because I remember you saying that you just weren't that amped up, you know, after a great performance in front of a big crowd in Vegas, and now you get a walk-off knockout, and you're just so calm. Why do you celebrate later, or are we seeing sort of the celebration right here?
I expected that. You know, I think I don't want to talk for everyone, but I think some people get really excited because they're kind of surprised if they knock someone out. I plan on knocking people out. I think for the last 3 weeks, I knew I was fighting Eddie Wineland on June 6th. So in my mind, I'm knocking Eddie Wineland out June 6th. Now I just did it. I just feel very calm. You know, Justin Gaethje was talking about it too on the Rogan podcast. You know, you get those ups and those downs. I try to stay pretty calm, pretty level. I'm not going to have a big come down after this. I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to stay pretty level. And like I said, I expected to knock him out in the first round.
Did you miss the crowd reaction when you dropped him?
The crowd makes it definitely amps everything up. If I could have picked to fight tonight with the crowd, I would have done it 100%. I love the fans. Like, it's a huge reason, like, I continue to want to get better and want to perform is the fans that are diehard fans that love this sport and they just want to watch fights. So I want to go out there and perform for those guys. They're all at home celebrating right now, which is awesome. But, you know, if I could hear them celebrating, it would have been cool.
Sean O'Malley, 12-0, 8 KOs, a bit of a puncher. What can I say? Yeah, he can punch, no doubt about that. And he is a bantamweight fighting at 135 pounds. Speaking of bantamweights, Henry Cejudo is a world bantamweight champ. He's also world featherweight champ. Of course, he doesn't get paid much money. Now, this guy is talking about making some money. I think in order for these lower divisions to make money, they've got to break away from the UFC. And what does that mean? I mean, you sort of take your act and walk. John Jones talk about walking. I think Conor McGregor retired last night. In other words, they are the only two real stars the UFC has. He paid the UFC. They pay John Jones about $5 million. They pay Conor McGregor in excess of that, no doubt about it. He gets a percentage of the pay-per-view. But at the end of the day, what other stars do they have that just don't? They really don't. As far as the UFC is concerned, they're going to come back June the 13th, still in the same arena, UFC Apex, of course, in Las Vegas, Nevada. Jessica Guy, battle of chicks on top. Women's flyweight bout. Jessica Guy going to go 5 rounds with Cynthia Covello, double C. She can fight. Both girls can fight. This is a good main event, no doubt about that. But, you know, how can I put this? Maybe I'm sexist, but I just don't, you know, I looked at the girls last night fighting, and at the end of the night, you know, Miss Spencer had such a terrible beating on her face, scars that probably will never ever heal. I mean, it's just like, yikes. I don't know. Maybe I'm getting old. I'm getting soft. I mean, I didn't like seeing that girl get whopped up like she did last night. I thought the fight should have been stopped. It could have been stopped a lot earlier. Anyway, Jess Guy and Cynthia Covello in the main event. Of course, that's on ESPN, June the 13th. Carl Robinson, a Marvel vet, and the co-feature outside of that. No other big-name fighters on the card. There are no other big-name fighters going. Curtis Blaydes is going to take on, of course, Curtis Blaydes, a heavyweight of note in the UFC. I mean, he can crack, but he doesn't always come in the world's greatest condition as far as condition is concerned. But he's going to be in the card on the 20th. Of course, they don't know who the main event is actually going to be. Take it back. The main event is going to be Alexander Volkov. Okay, obviously, this guy's a Russian guy. I can't find anything on him, but the bottom line is he's a Russian guy, and it's going to be the main event. That's how bad the UFC's gotten. There's no bios in any of these fighters. They don't even have bios on them. Why? Because they're no names. They're nobodies. They're bringing them brought in as fodder. I'm telling you, man, people thought that boxing was bad back in the days. They don't have to fix the UFC fights. They just bring a guy in like King Kong to fight me or Scott Cuddy. That's all. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. And I've been doggone if I wouldn't bring you my pay.
But I want to start getting paid. I want to start making heavyweight money.
If I ever caught you running around, blowing my money all over this town, then I wouldn't be doggone. Hey, hey, I'd be long gone. Then I wouldn't be doggone. I'd be long gone.
I think boxing is dangerous. Any man being hit in the head, the brain's a delicate thing. I think it should be well protected. If a fellow's not qualified, he shouldn't be allowed to fight. But football is proven to have more deaths. Baseball, ice hockey, horse racing, is a car racing is much more dangerous. But I would advise nobody to box if they get hit too much and it's too dangerous.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
October 1st, 1980, I land in Las Vegas for the very first time. I'm in my early 20s. I can't believe I'm here in Sin City, Las Vegas. Of course, about to take in a Muhammad Ali fight, the greatest fighter of all time. Coming back, of course, trying to win the World Heavyweight Championship for a record fourth time. In the other corner, the formidable, I'm talking about Mr. Larry Holmes, undefeated at Eastern Pennsylvania. Muhammad Ali's former sparring partner used to beat him up in sparring, I kid you not. So Ali and Holmes, there's some history between the two. But at the end of the day, Muhammad Ali should not have been in the ring.
If this was a Broadway play, they would review it as a tragedy.
Oh, that right hurt Ali. Oh, is taking a pounder.
This fight was an abomination. Was a crime.
It is sad to see this.
All of the people involved in this fight should have been arrested. Crime, arrest.
In 1980, Ali announces that he is coming back. Again, he wants to fight for the title, currently held by Larry Holmes.
I shall return. I will regain it on the third.
Is there any question as to why Ali fell apart? None of you were around looking at him. None of you saw him every day talking slower, walking slower, moving slower, punching less. You could see him falling apart. After the thrill in Manila, said to him, that's your last fight. You keep on fighting and you're going to go right into the grave. He said, no, I know, I got to stop. I want to stop. And he didn't.
What is it that motivates a retired champion to come back?
To be champion again. That's what motivates you, to be champion. And once you've been there, it's something to be sitting in that thing, you know? That's what motivates you, to be champion again. And I think that's what Ali's thinking about.
After every fight, I said, that's another one. You're walking slower. You're mumbling now. And he could see it, and he knew it. It wasn't that nobody told him. The flunkies around him didn't tell him because they need the money.
What do you think you do with Muhammad Ali? If you
Muhammad
got
Ali is no question about Muhammad Ali anymore. There are no more Muhammad Ali. There's only one, Larry Holmes. Muhammad Ali has seen the bright side, now he's on the dark side.
Legends die hard. Oh, he's ready to go.
But he wouldn't go down because he's Ali.
This must be stopped. It is a sad way to end.
The more years go by, the less people feel indignant about it. The less people say, oh, well, it was a fight. The fight game is not dirty. I mean, oh, well. Oh, well, hell.
Ali gets to his feet ever so slow for the 10th round. His left
you can see when Ali fought Holmes, he was shot. He wasn't the same fighter in any way, shape, or form that he had been in the years previous.
I was almost afraid to hit him in the body because I was in the camp with him many times. When he went to the bathroom, the word was he's urinating blood. And I didn't want to do that to him.
For all his life, all he heard was he was a shadow of Ali. Oh, well, they took a guy when he was down on his knees and pounded him the rest of the way.
The champion of all champion, Ali will fall. He won't go 8 rounds. I predict it. Ali will fall. The old man is in serious trouble.
Before the Nevada State Athletic Commission licensed Ali to fight, they asked him to go to the Mayo Clinic for a full report. That report said that when Ali tried to touch his finger to his nose, there was a slight degree of missing the target. He couldn't hop with the agility that the doctors expected he would.
By 1980, Larry Holmes was the best heavyweight and possibly the best boxer in the world. But a cloud hovered over him. To the public, Muhammad Ali was the only heavyweight who truly mattered. And whatever Larry Holmes did, he would never be Ali. It was no longer enough for Holmes to be heavyweight champion. To silence his critics and gain the public recognition he craved, Holmes would have to conquer the greatest.
He had trouble coordinating the muscles he used in speech. This is before he fought Larry Holmes.
They discovered there was an abnormality in Ali's brain.
No, they didn't. They said the only thing that they could find with Ali, they said he doesn't have recall. You know, he's short-term deficit. He doesn't have the recall.
Short-term memory.
Got to give me my just dues on the fight. It's a Holmes-Ali fight. It's not an Ali-Holmes fight. It's Holmes-Ali. And Ali had his day. This is my day. I say Ali used to float like a butterfly. He used to sting like a bee. But when he fight Larry Holmes, he'll fall in round three.
And the Nevada State Athletic Commission licensed him to fight on the basis of that report, which the commission never made public.
There was a man who had lost 30 pounds, who looked sleek. Everybody was caught up in the fact that it was Ali, and if he looked this good,
how could he lose?
Yes.
I'm gonna fall in three.
You was crazy. You slapped me.
That's just the beginning of what you're gonna get. You ain't knocked nobody out in 76, and you say you're gonna knock me out. I ain't never been out. 35 fights.
I'm gonna knock you out. And you scared of me. You know you meet your master.
I swear to God. I'm knocking you out.
Knock me out.
2 weeks before the fight, a doctor shows up. He's gonna inject him. What does this do? This gives you a lot of strength. I say, Ali, we don't need this stuff.
Dr. Charles Williams decided, just on the basis of observing that Ali was overweight, that he had a thyroid condition. And so he started prescribing Thyrolar.
You are my sparring partner, remember that. You are my sparring partner. And
you,
and listen, I'm superior, I'm the world's greatest.
Wait a minute, y'all ain't gonna get it. We gonna get paid for this.
What fighter in the history of the damn world has ever taken thyroid pills before a fight? That's like taking the wheels off of an Indianapolis Speedway racer and racing without tires. The muscle you use to fight is burned up by thyroid pills. Already his kidneys are shot. Now you're giving him stuff that make his kidneys work harder.
I had a very difficult time at first when I signed to fight Muhammad Ali because he was a legend. And nobody wanted to see this guy get beat. And a lot of people in the boxing business and the media business knew that my chances was 90% chances that I would win the fight.
Ali treated the Thyrolar tablets like diet pills, and instead of taking one a day, he took three a day.
I used to come in the room and he have maybe 10, 15, or 25 pills he's taking. I said, what's all this? It's my vitamin.
I see him pop every day, plump, you know.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling ready. I'm down to 218 pounds.
I thought he was taking vitamins.
For my first miracle.
It was thyroid pills. I didn't know. Muhammad was in the best shape of his life. He couldn't be better, trained properly. He got to look like the young Muhammad Ali, the physique, the big shoulders. I couldn't understand it, you know, and afterward, naturally, I found out he was taking thyroid pills.
Oh, he's ready to go. This must be stopped.
In the ninth round, when Larry hit him with that right cross to the stomach, he yelled, and I said, oh, my God.
Holmes looked back at the referee a couple of times, wanted him to stop it. He wouldn't.
You want me to continue to beat this guy? You want me to kill him? Is that what you want?
When Holmes had him in front of me, it was like hitting a slow-moving heavy bag. a heavy bag that once had skills, but the run was over.
I would hope they would stop this fight.
Sad to witness this, isn't it?
Angelo said to me, the reason I'm going to work with him is because I know when I can stop the fight if he's taking a beating. I said, no, you can't. You ain't got anything to do with it.
Savage.
I went to his room after the fight, and I said to him, man, you know, I love you. He said, well, if you love me, why you beat me up like that, dude? You know? And then when I left, he said, I will be back. I will return.
Larry, I'd like you to explain why you've been crying.
You know, so I really respect a whole lot, really respect Ali a whole lot.
It hurt you to punish him that way, didn't it?
I feel that he fought one of the baddest heavyweight in the world today, and you cannot take credit from him.
At the time I saw him with Holmes, I felt more a sense of relief than anything else, that it's finally over, and that people still remember him as a great champion, because there's too many great fights to remember. And the last one they had was kind of a sad ending, but they all knew that at one time he was the greatest.
All the other fights pushed him to the edge. This one buried him. This one buried him. And he's never been the same, and he's not going to be the same. It shouldn't have been. He should have had a nice, normal life to 80, 90, 100, whatever he could have, Ali could have lived forever. He was so strong. But we didn't get to see that.
Don't blame it on that one fight. Of course, that was Ferdy Bicicco. You heard from Larry Holmes, George Favalo, Ferdy, Sugar Ray Robinson, of course. What can I say? It was a nice time. We flew into Vegas the very first time. Hector Martinez, my cousin John Lutz, and myself. Of course, I remember John throwing us in the swimming pools and Mardi Gras in this place that we stayed in off the strip. We didn't know anything about Las Vegas. It was our first trip there, okay? And then I remember going back to the hotel room that night, October 2nd, 1980. Even though we partied a bit after the fight, I was almost like crying. I remember watching that fight like in the cheap seats, $50 seats, and my eyes were getting wet, okay? So then we go to the post-fight press conference the next day. Ali's there, and he's wearing sunglasses because he's obviously all beat up, this and that. And, you know, and I walk up to him and get an autograph, so I'm going to get an autograph, and I'm crying. I mean, you just tell me. You don't cry for me. I'll be okay, but I'm crying. I mean, it's like, whoa, man. I mean, my legend, you know, my hero, just getting the snot kicked out of him, but it was like a funeral. We should have known it going in. I mean, Larry Holmes was younger. He was undefeated, 35-0. I had watched the films of Larry Holmes sparring with Muhammad Ali for the George Foreman fight from Deer Lake, Pennsylvania. And I'm telling you, Larry was beaten, not to steal a line from Manny Nunes, but Larry was licking Ali like a stamp. I mean, holy, I kid you not. It was like that, you want to turn away and you want to cringe, of course. And they talked about that punch that Ali got hit with in the ninth and the tenth round, both rounds to the body. I thought that was pretty ugly, and it was pretty sad. You know, we were sitting there, my cousin John and Hector and myself, we were sitting there, and we really didn't know what to say. We were witnessing history, but it wasn't good history. It was like, it just wasn't. It was sort of like watching the Rodney King beating like 13 years earlier, except Larry Holmes was doing the beating and not the LAPD. I kid you not. It was a sad, sad night for boxing, a sad night, of course. And then Muhammad Ali decided he wasn't going to give it up. I kid you not. And here he is, 38 years old, October 1980. He decides to come back 1 year later. He goes over to Jamaica, and he's going to take on Trevor Burbick, the former WBC champion. Take that back, the future WBC champion. Anyway, guess what? Trevor beats him over 10 rounds. He thinks about fighting again. He only wins one round out of the 10, and he thinks about fighting again. Finally, people stepped in and said, you know what, Muhammad, they just will not give you a boxing license anymore. Even though he wanted one, he wanted to continue at 39 and 40 years old, he would not give up. And we talked about that a couple of times, not wanting to retire, not wanting to give up. And he said to me, I said, you know, he felt he owed it to the people that he was something special and that they really wanted to see him. He couldn't get away from it. I guess that was a little bit of ego, but some of it was true. Because people flocked to see Ali. I was in Asia with him. I kid you not. I mean, traffic stopped. People came from a village. I told you we stopped that train in a village, and they didn't have any teeth, and there were no electricity going into the village, just like outhouses, that kind of good stuff. But they knew who he was. And one lady fainted. I kid you not. She thought it was like, oh, my God, the Messiah. Muhammad Ali in person. Yeah, that was him. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
You want to take cash and play in when Howard yes. Cosell and everybody is calling Muhammad Ali. Now, why you got to be the one of all people who's color to keep saying cash is clay? My name is Muhammad Ali, and you will announce it right there in the center of that ring after the fight if you don't do it now.
of the effort that you made and all of the people whose names I haven't mentioned, but who made all, did all of the work at the precinct level, who got out the vote, who did all of the effort, brought forth all of the effort that's required. I was a campaign manager 8 years ago. I know what a difference that kind of an effort and that kind of commitment makes. So I thank all of you. Mayor Yorty has just sent me a message that we've been here too long already. So my thanks to all of you, and now it's on to Chicago, and let's win there.
June 6, 1968, Robert Francis Kennedy, then senator, of course, from New York State, a candidate for the Democratic nomination for presidency. Of course, I remember I told you the story where Jim Garrison called Bobby Kennedy. Take that back. He went to meet Bobby Kennedy in the Senate office. I want to get the story right. In Washington, D.C. So Jim Garrison is the district attorney in New Orleans. Of course, he would be the only man that would bring a prosecution. He prosecuted Clay Shaw. Of course, Clay Shaw was acquitted as far as being a conspirator in the assassination of President Kennedy. But Jim Garrison went to Bobby Kennedy. I guess they were talking in Kennedy's office in May of 1968, about a month or 6 weeks before he died. And Jim Garrison said, and they're talking back and forth, and Jim Garrison says, you know, Bob, you got to make a move on those guys that killed your brother. You got to make a move on a guy. And Bobby says, you know, I'm going after the guys that killed Jack. That's what he called him, Jack. That's what they called him. Anyway, I'm going after the guys that killed Jack after the convention. And Jim Garrison says to him, no, you don't get it. You're not going to make it to the convention. And Bobby gets pissed off. I can't use no other word than that, but he gets pissed off. He throws something across the desk at Garrison. Yeah! So anyway, the big blow up. Garrison leaves the office. 6 weeks later, Bobby Kennedy's dead. Coincidence? I don't think so. Anyway, bottom line is we switch gears from RFK and JFK, of course, 1968, to the life and times of Muhammad Ali. His first wife, well, what can I tell you? The best thing about his first wife was she was his first wife.
Immediately after the trip to Africa, Muhammad Ali meets Sanji Roy in Chicago. After an intense six-week romance, the heavyweight champ is a married man.
In my mind, I didn't think I was going to like this guy anyway, because he was just, I'm not one to brag about myself, and when people do that, sometimes it turns you off. And when I first met him, the initial contact between us, all of this was not there. He just zeroed in on me and just swept me up, and I was amazed, as they say. Two or three days after meeting Muhammad Ali, I went to meet his parents in Louisville, but I left Chicago as his wife, and I told my people, my relatives, that I had gotten married this way, and that I was going to meet my mother-in-law.
Well, you think your personality has changed since you've won the title?
Well, I'm a little more relaxed and settled. As you can see, I have a pretty wife here, and I don't have to talk like I do. She don't like me to talk too much, do you? Yeah. She told me to be quiet.
Why did you do that?
Action speaks for itself. You didn't have to talk anymore.
She said, I don't have to talk anymore. She don't like to talk either. She just like to listen.
You know, most heavyweight champions are ugly. I have to stay kind of pretty.
Thank you very much. Careful, that's a toupee in the front.
Happy and loose, Ali is unconcerned about his controversial image. His next fight will be a rematch with Sonny Liston, whom Ali has dubbed the Bear.
You should be in Hollywood.
I'm so pretty I should be chiseled in gold.
So you
want the battle?
Please.
Turner, I want the battle.
Get him a
Tony.
Hold him.
I'm going to the battle.
Told you that raw steak do that, son.
She don't like to talk either. She just like to listen.
You know, most heavyweight champions are ugly. I have to stay kind of pretty.
Thank you very much. Careful, that's a toupee in the front.
Happy and loose, Ali is unconcerned about his controversial image. His next fight will be a rematch. Immediately after the trip to Africa, Muhammad Ali meets Sanji Roy in Chicago. After an intense six-week romance, the heavyweight champ is a married man.
In my mind, I didn't think I was going to like this guy anyway, because he was just, I'm not one to brag about myself. Or two or three days after meeting Muhammad Ali, I went to meet his parents in Louisville, but I left Chicago as his wife, and I told my people, my relatives, that I had gotten married this way, and that I was going to meet my mother-in-law.
Well, you think your personality has changed since you've won the title?
Well, I'm a little more relaxed and settled. As you can see, I have a pretty wife here, and I don't have to talk like I do. She don't like me to talk too much, do you? He told me to be quiet.
Why did you do that?
Action speaks for itself. You didn't have to talk anymore.
She said, I don't have to talk anymore.
And when people do that, sometimes it turns you off. And when I first met him, the initial contact between us, all of this was not there.
Of course, that was his first wife. Sandra Roy married her in 1964. They were married until 1966. Ali wanted her to convert to Islam. She wouldn't do it. Of course, Ali got married to a lady by the name of Belinda Boyd in 1967. She would name her and change her name to Kalia Ali. They would be married until 1976. In 1977, he married Veronica Porsche Ali. Of course, they were married from 1977 to 1986. I remember meeting her in 1980 and, of course, seeing her in 1980. And then Lonnie Ali. He married her in 1986, Veronica. He married her in 1986, and they were married until his death in 2016. And, you know, I've been around a lot of boxers, a lot of champions, and as I told you in the past, in fact, a lady that celebrated her birthday this past week, Frankie Pryor, the wife of the late Aaron Pryor, the world junior welterweight champion, Aaron Pryor told me that he saved her life, okay? But Ali told me the same thing about Lonnie. I kid you not. He told me this. We were on a bus in Macau, and he said something to the point where, you know, we need to get back to Lonnie or something like that, blah, 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 blah. And he said to me, you got a Lonnie? And I was going through a divorce right then. It was a bad time to be asking me that, but I didn't have a Lonnie. Anyway, he had a Lonnie. I'm telling you, Lonnie was a special person. She looked out for Ali like I couldn't imagine anybody else looking out for him. I just couldn't imagine that. Of course, when he passed away in 2016, she had that great speech at the funeral. And, of course, it was an epic speech. And she's just a wonderful lady, a class lady. And I only got to really meet her. I mean, as far as the wives were concerned, I got to see them, but I never got to meet them. And I got to spend time around Lonnie Ali, a couple trips to China, and then one trip to Buenos Aires as well. So three trips internationally, a couple of trips domestically, and got to see what Muhammad Ali's life was really like, of course, because his wife was taking care of him. We're talking about a guy that was suffering from Parkinson's syndrome or Parkinson's disease, and you got to say it, you got to give it up, the residual effects of professional boxing. I mean, this was not something that happened to chess players. You heard him talking slow there at the end, okay, of that segment we did in segment three there about the Ali Holmes fight. You could hear him, I'm going to return. He was so slow compared to the 60s. And yeah, people slow down as they grow older, but they don't slow down like that. I mean, he went from a 78 record to like a 33. Should have been at a 45 maybe at that point in time for his life, but he went to like 33 RPMs. You people that know what vinyl records are about know what that is. For you people not in the world of, in the digital world, we're talking about a vinyl record you used to put in a record player, you used to spin around. Well, records used to spin at 15, I mean, it was a 15, 33, 45, and 78. Well, Ali at one point in time was a 78 record, and he was reduced to a 33 RPM. He was really in bad shape at that point in time, but yet we believed in him because he was Ali. I mean, we knew that the chances of him pulling this off were like probably not going to happen, but it's sort of like wrestling in the old days before Vince McMahon ruined it. You wanted to believe in it. You believed down deep in your heart that, you know, this guy, nothing, I mean, he was going to come up with this incredible victory, and it was going to be the greatest time ever, and all of Las Vegas was going to dance. Instead, we went back to the hotel at the Mardi Gras Inn, I remember that night, and crying. I mean, it was really a sad night. It just was. Anyway, some of the things that Ali's wives have said about him. The second wife, Belinda Boyd, a.k.a. Kalia Muhammad Ali, Kalia Ali, said that he was a sex addict. They were married in 1967. She said that he would arrange the hotel rooms. She would arrange. So check this back. She would arrange the hotel rooms so her husband could have trysts with as many mistresses as he wanted. I kid you. I guess that's part of the good thing about being a Muslim, because you have more than like one lover or something, any more than one wife. But anyway, Ali was, according to his second wife, a sex addict. Now, I knew he liked action. I mean, I've been around him. They called him the pelvic missionary. He wasn't called the pelvic missionary for nothing. Come on, the pelvic missionary. What do you think it was? Because he was like fixing pelvic bones? Nah, not really. 56-5. Got knocked out that one time, October 2nd, 1980. Of course, retired in 1981 after losing to Trevor Rurick over there in Kingston, Jamaica. 56-5. One stop, 37 KOs. Hadn't knocked anybody out in a long, long time. In fact, he hadn't knocked anybody out since 1976. He knocked out a guy by the name of Richard Dunn. Probably a guy that Scott Cuddy could have knocked him out. I mean, Dunn was a stiff. Of course, the fight before that was with Jimmy Young, and he lost that fight. I mean, everybody knows that. If you watch that, you got to be honest. You look at that fight for 15 rounds, and Jimmy Young won more of the 3-minute sessions of boxing than did Muhammad Ali. Before that, it was Jean-Pierre Koopman, and of course, it was the Joe Frazier fight, the third fight. That's really the fight that ruined Ali. There's no doubt about it. The Thriller in Manila, October 1st, 1975. Of course, man, we went to the theaters to watch this fight. I think it was at the theaters. It was at Winterland. I mean, you went to watch this on closed circuit. No pay-per-view. Couldn't watch this at home, I guess, unless you were like a zillionaire. But straight up, Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali went 14 rounds. Of course, Eddie Futch stopping that fight. My friend Eddie Futch. God, I miss him. Anyway, Eddie Futch, a trainer of trainers, stopping that fight in the 14th round, and he told Joe, "You've got nothing to be ashamed of. You've got nothing to be ashamed of," and making Joe sit on the stool, of course, and stopping the fight before the 15th round. And Muhammad Ali had been just beating up on Joe. It was like his head was on a stick, and Ali was just punching at it. So the fight needed to be stopped, and Eddie Futch had the intestinal fortitude, the wherewithal, and the care to step in. You know, I remember when he was in his declining days, I saw him in a wheelchair. I'm talking about Eddie Futch. This is a guy that trained Berry Gordy. That's right, Berry Gordy, the guy that owned Motown Records. He was a professional fighter at one point in time. I believe he went 11-2 out of fighting out of Detroit. Eddie Futch was his trainer. Anyway, Eddie tells me, I guess it's about 6 to 8 months before he passes, that he can feel it slipping. I said to him, "Godfather," I said, "why are you in a wheelchair? You can't walk." He said, "nah, it was a long way from the front gate. They figured if I had a wheelchair, you know, I'd have a little more energy. I could stand up and walk around, this kind of good stuff." I said, "okay." So he gets up and he walks around, I guess to show me that he could still walk around. But he was sort of cool. And then he got back in the wheelchair. But he said to me before he left, he grabbed me by the arm. He said to me, he said, "kid?" I said, "yeah." He goes, "you know, I'm not slipping physically. I'm slipping mentally." And I went, "huh?" He goes, "yeah." He goes, "I'm starting to forget things." And this was tripping me out because Eddie Futch, the greatest trainer of all time. Yeah, Angelo, then he gets a lot of accolades, this and that. But Futch needs to be up there as far as one of the top trainers of all time. But here he was admitting the fact that age was taking its effect and that he was going away. He was passing away. And he was basically telling me. And I remember him grabbing my arm that night and squeezing my arm, saying, "you take care of yourself, champ." And I said, yeah. And, of course, I expect to see Eddie again. The wheelchair thing was a prop because he wouldn't want to walk from the front gate. I understood that. Well, he would die a few months later, of course. His wife, Eva Futch, she sort of keeps the Futch tradition going. She's a class act. But, man, I really, really, truly miss Eddie Futch. You are tuned to Ring Talk live worldwide on Sports Byline.
Henry Cooper's nothing to me. If this bum go over 5 rounds, I won't return to the United States for 30 days. That's final.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
When the night has come,
let's just play a little bit.
And the land is dark, and the moon.
Guess who, boxing fans? His name was Cassius Clay at that point in time. Of course, talk about Muhammad Ali. This is Stand By Me. It was a remake of a Benny King song. Of course, Benny King was one of the original Drifters. But the Drifters didn't want to do the record. They told Benny, "guess what, man? You go do that record by yourself." So he goes and does the record by himself and sells more records than all the records the Drifters ever had put together. I kid you not. So Benny King and Stand By Me, and that's Muhammad Ali doing that. Ali was nominated for 2 Grammys. I don't know if that was for one of them there, but he was nominated for 2 Grammys. I kid you not. Boxing returns this week, of course, June the 9th. Live on ESPN, ESPN Plus. Of course, Shakur Stevenson, 13-0, 7 KOs, taking on Felix Carabello, 13-1, a couple of draws and 9 whacks. These guys are going to do it at 130 pounds, 10 rounds. He is a 2016 Olympic silver medalist, pride of Newark, New Jersey. He is a bad dude, no doubt about it, but he's stepping up to super featherweight, 130 pounds, when I think he's got unfinished business at 126. There are other guys with belts at 126. The WBO champion needs to unify, I think. He went 4-0 2019. He's got some incredible skills, but he gets in trouble outside the ring, so we're hoping he can keep it together outside the ring so he can get it together inside the ring. Of course, the co-feature is going to be Mikella Meyer. Battle of women here, 12-0, 5 KOs to go on Helen Joseph, 17-4-2 with 10 KOs. A couple of women with KOs. I mean, holy cow, I kid you not, KOs, knockouts. Not like women, you watch these fights with Clarissa Shields and this, it's like the way it'll put a crack addict to sleep. You got a problem, you need to go to sleep? Watch Clarissa Shields fights, I kid you not. She'll put you to sleep. But these women, they can punch, I kid you not. So that box is going to be happening June 9th, June 11th, ESPN Live from Las Vegas. On the 11th, of course, it's going to be from the MGM Grand Gardens Center Grand Ballroom. The main event is going to be Jesse Magdaleno, 27-1, 18-wax, taking on Yennefer Vicente, 36-4, with a couple of draws and 28 KOs, of course. June 11th, June 9th, Top Rank and Bob Arum putting on the show live on ESPN and ESPN+. This has been another production of Ring Talk Live Worldwide, live Saturdays and Sundays, 11 a.m. Pacific time on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. Of course, you can get your podcast at anchor.com. This is Ring Talk.